Welcome to the latest edition of the IDEA podcast from the Irish Development Education Association. I'm your host, Emma Green, and today's episode features a keynote session from our virtual conference, Global Citizenship and Inequality in 2021, Forging a New Path. Our keynote speaker is Professor Richard Wilkinson, co-author of the groundbreaking books, The Spirit Level and The Inner Level. And the moderator is Frank Geary, who's director of IDEA. I hope you enjoy.
I'm really delighted to welcome everybody back for the keynote and to welcome our keynote speaker, Professor Richard Wilkinson. Richard is a hugely influential writer and researcher on inequality, and the book that he co-authored, The Spirit Level, as I'm sure all of you will know, has been hugely influential and really brought inequality to the fore for many researchers and policymakers. Richard is Professor Emeritus of Social Epidemiology at the University of Nottingham Medical School, Honorary Professor at UCL, and Visiting Professor at the University of York. And he has a background in economics and epidemiology, and his books and research papers have drawn on and paid attention to the tendency for societies with bigger income differences between rich and poor to suffer a heavier burden of health and social problems. He and Kate Pickett co-wrote The Spirit Level and The Inner Level, and two of his books have been subject of documentary films, a film called The Great Leveler for Channel 4, and The Divide on Netflix, which is based on The Spirit Level. So we're delighted to have Richard with us, who will speak to us for about 40 minutes. So without further ado, many thanks, Richard, and over to you.
Well, thank you very much. It's really lovely to have this opportunity to talk to you. I spent a while thinking about what global citizenship means now. My work in the past has been, it started off looking at health inequalities and trying to understand what the main drivers were of the huge differences in life expectancy between different social classes, and then developed from that and looking at the effects of income inequality. And I am a bit worried when someone says I have a background in economics, because I don't really. Indeed, I think of economics as almost as a mental illness, as some people understand it. That's not to say there aren't some extremely sane economists, ecological economists, for instance. What I want to do, though, is to go through just reminding people really of the obvious, the big problems that our societies have to deal with now, which I think provide the sort of underpinnings of what it means to be a global citizen. So I'm just going to give you reminders of these big problems here: the military expenditure, the climate crisis, COVID, and probably more pandemics to follow, the problem of refugees and displaced people, the huge flows of population now, and then all the problems of tax. I actually don't know about all the problems of tax, but I do know a little bit about the extraordinary levels of tax avoidance. But just to start with reminding you of the scale of military expenditure, which in a way shows how our societies face international relations, armed to the teeth, spending these huge sums on defense, on weapons of mass slaughter. The total there, note actually this pie chart is 2019, but that total military expenditure I have on the left is the next year. I put that up because 2 trillion is a rounder number, easier for us to remember. I don't think people realize that the USA is far and away the biggest military expenditure. You see the UK, I should have checked that Ireland was there. It's not, presumably, because you're spending only a small amount, as you should be, much better than these others. But when we think about US military expenditure, we normally, I think, imagine USA, Russia and China, but actually Russia and China are tiny compared to USA. So that just a reminder of the scale of this and how it is symbolic of how we face other nations. The next big problem is, of course, the problems of the climate crisis. And it's, of course, not only global warming, but storms and droughts and floods and sea level rises and changes in the acidity of the sea, a huge host of problems. I want to show you these different things or remind you of them just because they're all problems that affect everyone in the world. They're huge problems that can only be solved by international cooperation. And of course, the climate crisis endangers us with more conflict. Apparently, of the 20 countries most vulnerable to climate change, 12 of them are mired in conflict. And things like water shortages and whether people are taking too much from any of the great rivers that flow through several countries. Those sorts of things lead to conflict, but also the streams of refugees and people who can no longer carry on their traditional agriculture and having to leave their homes for reasons like that. I think it's important at the same time to remember, and if you look as here, this is rather out of date. I think we put this in our spirit level book, but it might have been in a paper then. At CO2 emissions per head in each country and life expectancy, you see that world average CO2 emissions, that vertical line, most of the rich developed countries are the wrong side of that line, and it doesn't gain them any extra life expectancy. And if instead of life expectancy, I have had happiness or measures of well-being, the picture would be very largely the same. And note that there are countries that achieve high life expectancy without high levels of CO2 emissions. And that is on existing, or actually, as this is an old graph, past technology. So, you know, even with our very polluting technology, it was possible to achieve high levels of happiness, well-being, life expectancy with much, much lower levels of CO2 emissions. I think that's really important to remember. And if we move to abandon fossil fuels and make all the other changes we need to, it should be possible to move well down near the zero emissions. The problem of COVID all over the world, these are the cases in 2020, and it's not just going to be COVID that spreads throughout the world. And in fact, we're very lucky that COVID had such low mortality rates. My daughter was in Sierra Leone during doing work on the Ebola epidemic. And of course, the case fatality rates were hugely much higher. And the danger is that we will get new diseases with much higher fatality rates. And the only way of dealing with them is, of course, vaccination and cures that are shared worldwide. we know we're going to get new variants that will challenge the vaccinations we've got simply because we haven't shared those the vaccines sufficiently widely on a large enough scale. So, you know, this is a problem that, again, demands international cooperation in a quite unprecedented way. This shows you the percent of the populations of the world that are of different countries that have had large numbers of the population immunized. And you see the whole of Africa, almost the whole of Africa, with those very low levels of immunization. Other countries with low levels will be generating new problems for us. You know, any view of enlightened self-interest means we must share these things. We must act together globally. Refugees, I don't think people are aware of the scale of the problem of refugees. And this isn't all displaced people. But if you think of 30 million refugees, usually living in pretty awful conditions, and the problems that this causes and the reaction of the host populations, and the tiny influx of refugees into European countries has quite changed the politics of those countries, led to racism and the far right and so on raising its head. So, you know, these are huge challenges to all of us. And again, we have to think on a global scale. But some of these problems are importantly driven by the climate crisis. I wanted also to remind you, in terms of the means of dealing with these problems, our need for funds to deal with them globally, the scale at which the super rich and big corporations manage to avoid paying tax. Those estimates, they're very rough estimates. They come from Nicholas Shaxson, who is the Tax Justice Network. And you see my comparisons, those figures of the scale of tax avoidance. Four times the English NHS expenditure and twice the military expenditure of China each year. So that's just to give you an idea of the scale of the funds that are getting lost to governments that could be used to solve some of these problems. But we face all these problems, these huge global problems, as if we were still self-sufficient, nations of self-sufficient peasant farmers. But in the last generation, in my lifetime, we've moved from being those kinds of societies to systems of global interdependence. I remember the sort of agriculture around us when I was a child. I've seen in France in the 70s, I remember people ploughing with wooden plough and oxen, and markets where people took their ducklings and their rabbits and vegetables to sell. It's now, those exist at all, it's just for largely for tourism, but our world has changed beyond belief. Everything we had for breakfast probably comes from other countries. And of course, I'm speaking with technology made the other side of the world. And so we have become a global species, dependent on people the other side of the world. And yet, I think our politicians have forgotten that, you know, this isn't 1821 or 1921, this is 2021. And yet they're still facing world problems as if this world interdependence just wasn't true. I want, though, to point out now that our attitudes to other countries, to each other through this global interdependence, is substantially affected by the nature of social relations within our societies. You can see here this, again, very old data, I'm afraid, but it shows the gradient of mortality across our society in many, well, all just about all societies have these patterns of health inequalities. Ireland has big ones, and so do we, and Americans even bigger. Some of the European countries, North Europeans, a bit smaller. But this pattern of gradient, of a social gradient in mortality that is to do with class and status, is an indication of how the society we live in determines the extent to which it determines our lives. And if you look at the inequalities between the rich developed countries rather than within them, you find it has virtually no effect on our death rates. You see, some of those countries have almost twice as much income as others, and yet it doesn't seem to affect life expectancy. So what goes on within societies is extremely important, and it doesn't just determine our life expectancy, it affects our social relations and our view of other people, other countries. So basically, what I was trying to say there, inequality within countries has a substantial influence on shaping attitudes to other countries, to whether a country tends more to international cooperation or competition, and to the frequency of conflict. I'm going to show you the evidence behind that statement. But first, I want to point out that people misunderstand what inequality does to us, the inequality within our societies, the social hierarchy, the class differences, the importance of social status. They think it only matters if it creates absolute poverty, or people think it's terribly unfair. But actually, it creates a social relationship between superior and inferior. So we see people as superior or inferior. It creates that hierarchy. And so in a way, we should think of inequality as a social relationship. As such, it increases status competition and status insecurity. It increases anxieties about self-worth. It intensifies worries about how we're seen and judged by other people, and we worry about whether people see us as attractive or unattractive, clever or stupid, interesting or boring, all those sorts of things. It increases the evaluative way in which we judge each other, from superior to inferior. In our Spirit Level book, we put together data on how countries do in terms of these things listed on the left there: life expectancy, kids' maths and literacy scores, from the OECD PISA data, infant mortality rates, homicide rates, imprisonment, that's the proportion of the population in prison, teenage births, how much people feel they can trust others, obesity rates, mental illness, and figures on social mobility. All those are quite strongly related to the scale of inequality in a country. They all get worse when the gap between rich and poor is bigger. And that's what you're seeing here. So USA, Portugal, UK have worse outcomes on all those kinds of things than the more equal countries, the Scandinavian countries and Japan, when we did this work. Of course, countries have been changing their inequalities over time. Unfortunately, most have increased their inequalities. It's not, though, just these items here I was worried that people would think we'd chosen these items just to prove our point. But actually, if you look at the for instance, the UNICEF index of child well-being, which it's a quite different index. It's made up of, I think, 40 different components. So whether kids can talk to their parents, whether there's bullying at school, what child immunization rates are like, all that goes into it. Here, low scores are bad. In the last one, high scores were bad. So what you're seeing is the more unequal countries, again, USA, Portugal, USA particularly, are doing particularly badly in terms of child well-being and all those things I've just shown you. So I'm trying to hurry through this evidence that more unequal countries with those bigger gaps between rich and poor do worse on a whole range of social and health outcomes. And actually, there is now evidence from, I think, well, this is four papers, but I think there are now five that show that the experience of COVID was worse, higher death rates and so on in more unequal countries. But point I made earlier that more unequal countries, the inequality affects social relationships, our relationships with each other, and how we treat other human beings more widely internationally. I think the next few graphs are perhaps quite important for making that point. This is the result of what they call a lost wallets experiment, where wallets are left, and the question is, are they returned by people who pick them up thinking they're accidentally lost? And you see in the more unequal countries on the right, only about 20% of them come back, whereas in the more equal countries on the top left there, 80% of them come back. And that is a profound indication of, I think, different social relationships, even with people you've never come across or met. Imprisonment rates are much higher in more unequal countries. On the left there, you've got a number of prisoners per 100,000. Note that it's a log scale. And the differences go from about 40 per 100,000 population to over 10 times that level. So this again shows that in more unequal societies, people treat other people more harshly. This is really telling us that the criminal justice system becomes more punitive. It's affected a little bit by more crime, but most of it, most of this relationship reflects a more punitive penal system. Longer sentences, harsher sentences, so on. Sent to prison for longer, more for less serious offences in more unequal countries. I want now to give you a little picture of how inequality affects the way we relate to each other, other aspects of the way we relate to each other. So this is civic participation, whether people are involved in local community life, know their neighbours, do voluntary work, all that kind of thing. And you see this measure of civic participation shows participation is lower in more unequal countries. That's been, in most of these things I'm showing you, have been replicated quite a number of times. People also trust each other less. These the more unequal countries on the right, fewer people feel most people can be trusted. This is the percentage of the population who agree that most people can be trusted. We repeated all this work, not just on these rich developed countries, but on the 50 American states, asking just the same question, whether the states with the bigger income differences within them do worse on these things. And the picture is very substantially the same. So people in the more unequal American states trust each other much less. There is now a paper showing that people are less willing to help each other in more unequal societies, less willing to help the disabled or the elderly. So really profound effects on how we treat each other. This is the percent of the population who agree that they would do better than average in a fight. People are sort of almost gung-ho for a fight. And it's an extraordinary measure. And, you know, through my, well, since my teens, the number of people who have who now learn martial arts of different kinds, it's just extraordinary how that has changed. Homicide rates have gone up, as closely related to inequality. We don't know what the lag periods are between a rise in inequality and a change in homicide, but these are American states and the blue triangles are Canadian provinces. The scale of the differences, homicides per million people, you know, the blue triangles, the Canadian provinces, they're around, what, 15 homicides per million people, and the more unequal American states, it goes up to 150, a tenfold difference in the homicide rates. There must be 50 or 60 papers in a peer-reviewed journal showing those relationships in different countries all around the world. You know, really consistent relationship. And yet, you know, last night on the Channel 4 news, there was an item on knife crime in London, all the stabbings. Not mentioned the relationship between with inequality. If you go and look at much more unequal countries, you see things have got much worse, much more unequal than those that bunch of rich developed countries I've been showing you. We gave some lectures in Mexico, and the huge inequality is much bigger than the USA or Britain. The people are they're not just withdrawn from community life and not trust each other with higher levels of violence, but they're frightened of each other. They barricade their houses with these fences, bars on windows, razor wire around the fences, and just the same in South Africa, which of course has huge inequalities for much the same reason. The cost of inequality is you lose that reciprocity, that community life, and people's involvement in each other, the sort of public spiritedness. And you get this situation where people fear each other. Those wires at the top are, of course, an electric fence, and that notice that you can just about read says armed response. It's telling you you might get shot if you climb in. So that is why I say one should see inequality as a social relationship, not only between superior and inferior, but changing our relationships to each other so we do fear each other. And that picture I've just given you is confirmed by data from quite a different source. This is two American economists, and they again have shown this relationship internationally and for American states. What it shows you is the proportion of the labor force in each country occupied in what they call guard labor. That means police, prison officers, security staff, goes up with inequality. Because those are the people in the labor force, in a way, we use to protect ourselves from each other. You know, if you don't trust other people, lawyers are more important, and you do worry about not having enough police on the street and all that kind of stuff. But if that is your experience of social relationships, your understanding of how we are related to each other, of course it affects how you treat international relations, what you think, how you need to protect yourself from others. Inequality basically makes status and class matter more in our relationships. And you can see how it affects international relationships. This is the Global Peace Index, measuring the sort of militarization of societies, their involvement in conflict, use of armed police, and so on. And again, more inequality. Those societies do worse on the Global Peace Index. They also do less well in terms of foreign aid. In Britain, Boris Johnson has just decided to cut very substantially the amount we give in foreign aid, just at the time when, of course, countries are having to deal with the pandemic. When it comes to dealing with the environmental crisis, surveys of business leaders' opinions. Business leaders think international agreements and environmental issues are more important. Business leaders in more equal countries think they're more important. In more unequal countries, business leaders, I suspect, think it's not their job. It's for governments. Their job is just to earn money. So again, you see these more unequal countries with those different social relationships within them treating the rest of the world differently. The more unequal countries also emit more CO2 per $100 of income. You can look at other indications, perhaps, of awareness of environmental issues. This is the amount that people in different countries recycle different waste materials. I think it's five different waste materials, you know, like glass and paper and plastics and so on. And they recycle more in the more equal countries. They use bicycles more. As well. So in all sorts of ways, the last one of those is about consumerism. Because status becomes so important in more unequal countries, people in those more unequal places spend more on status consumption, high status cars and clothes with the right designer labels and all that sort of stuff. So my conclusion, what I want to sort of take away message is that we face a very clear choice between the policies of enlightened self-interest on those big five issues I pointed out at the beginning to reduce the causes of conflict, which if we don't reduce those causes of conflict, if we deal with them as politicians continue to do from the point of view of a very narrow short-term self-interest, we will destroy our common well-being. And that's true whether we're thinking of new pandemics, whether we're thinking of the environment, whether we're thinking of these issues of the rich finding ways around taxation, which means that our governments are less able to tackle those problems effectively. So I'll stop there. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy this episode. Don't forget to check out our website for more. Until the next time.